Yesterday evening we discussed verses 35 and 36 from chapter 25. I hope that we can cover the full, the details of the rest of chapter 25. Glories of devotional service. Two main things we heard yesterday. The object, heard Kapiladeva describe to Devahuti the object of meditation in devotional service. The beautiful bodily features of the personality of God. He's speaking in the first person. My smiling face with eyes like the rising morning sun. Pretty interesting that he's describing himself in that way, as opposed to a devotee describing what they see. But in either case, the all-attractive features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That Supreme Personality of God has various forms, and the various forms are objects for the devotee. And the last point in that first verse was they not only they see the form of the Lord, but they're engaging hearing and chanting activities in relation. So deity worship and the Pancharatrika Marg and the Bhagavat Vidhi Marg are good companions. You left the door open? Ah, okay. Attention going to the object of devotion. It's this subject-object language. Ashraya and Vishaya, the abode of love and the object of love. And then the relationship between the two. So in bhakti, the object of love is clear, the personality of Godhead and the attractive features and the ways of approaching those attractive features, seeing his form, discussing about him, hearing about him, recognizing his diversities of form, and then the other verse we discussed was in that process of devotional service, the disinterest in any other thing. Virakti Vanyatra Cha from the Bhagavatam's language. The importance that one holds in material life or conditional life, it changes, but it's always something that's important. And then we're pursuing that something that's important. And all those somethings that are important in material life fade into insignificance when one is properly situated in devotional service. Remember that little discussion. Causelessly, knowledge and detachment arise from devotional service. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojatah Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayyad Haitukam. The principle of detachment from other things is the consequence of attachment to Krishna. Krishna says that in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. What is called renunciation is the same as yoga or linking with the Supreme. Because from the higher taste of linking with the Supreme, the lower taste fades. the higher nature and the lower nature, attraction to worldly, sensual, egocentric existence fades. The struggle is over. One can easily cross beyond that struggle by taking shelter of Krishna. So that's the second verse that we discussed, detachment from all other things. And including the detachment from the desire for detachment, the desire for liberation. Let me out of here, I can't take it anymore. The place is crazy. And that liberationist, salvationist, for people in the spiritual pursuit, that's a big one. I mean, for example, in Christianity, it's a common salvation. Is a common terminology. We get relief from this and elevation to the heavenly realm. Salvation. And the concept of eternity isn't, different stages and phases of time is not prevalent, but salvation. What the message here is, the spirit of a devotee is, they don't care for that. They only want one thing, devotional service. Place me anywhere. Give me devotional service. Prabhupada quotes here, let me take birth as an insect or a whatever, but in the house of a devotee. And give me the opportunity for a high post in the heavenly realm without devotional service. No, thank you. Let me have the association of devotees. Let me engage in devotional service. However challenging the circumstance of devotional service may be, let me have that opportunity for devotional service. In any case, that's the spirit or the disposition of a devotee, properly situated devotee. And then the conclusion is, in spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation. Krishna gives it anyway because devotional service is executed from the liberated platform, from Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, from that position. Mam Chayo Vyabhicharina Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sagunam Samatityaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Devotional service is executed from the Brahman platform. So the devotee may say to Krishna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Krishna, Mama Janmani Janmani Shwari Bhavatag Bhakti Ahaitikitvi. I'm not seeking from you liberation, birth after birth. But the Lord gives it anyways. Because it's not speaking of where one is situated in terms of embodiment or what loka you're on, but one who's engaged in devotional service, that is the transcendental platform. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he gives pages of scriptural evidence to indicate that. So when disinterest is there in things material, understand that it's disinterest in things material. But the interest in relation to Krishna things, we accept those things. But the dividing line between spiritual and material is to see those things in relation to Krishna. Let's say it differently. Prabhupada gave a simple definition of material and spiritual. Real simple. Material, seeing things separate from Krishna. Spiritual, seeing things in relation to Krishna. same things. But the consciousness behind those things. How do you regard those things? And you see them separate from Krishna, that's material. See them in relation to Krishna, that's spiritual. Really simple. So now acting in that consciousness, that's a little more challenging. It's not theoretical, it's practical. Jnana vijnanam. With that consciousness comes detachment. Because it's Krishna's. In fact, everything is Krishna's. It's from Krishna. Even things that are not nice can't happen without Krishna's support. So there's a from Krishna connection. There's a purpose in that connection, an elevating purpose in that connection. We may not be able to see it. We may not be able to understand how such and such has an elevating component to it, but in faith there's an elevating component to it, like retribution for our misdeeds. Anyway, Krishna gives liberation. Krishna gives those things. There's some statement here. I think it's in this one. Yeah. So text 37, that's this morning's verse. The same theme continues. The devotee doesn't want liberation. Now in this verse, the devotee doesn't want any benediction from this material realm up to Satyaloka, Brahmaloka, and relief from things that are down here. The devotee doesn't have that. The standard of pure devotional service that Kapila Dev is teaching to Devahuti doesn't have that element. There's disinterest in duality. There's recognition of this is this kind of duality, there's that kind of duality, but not I want that one or I don't want that one. Na me dvesho stina priyaha, not attracted or repulsed by. Recognizing what diversity is and acting appropriately in diversity, but in the topmost platform, like Rishabh Dev, complete disinterest, lanavaduta. So here's the verse. Thus, speaking of this platform of devotional service that Kapila Dev is teaching to Devahuti, thus, because he is completely absorbed in thought of me, like Prahlad Maharaj, he achieves spiritual perfection through Vishnu Smaranam, constant remembrance, or in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the topmost platform of bhakti, or topmost platform of consciousness, is mind completely absorbed in me, intelligence always engaged in me. Surely you will live in me always, without a doubt. So, what the mind does is very important. Manmana, always think of Krishna. When the mind is so absorbed, as the previous verses are describing, seeing the form of the Lord, the beautiful smiling face, the deity forms of the Lord, hearing the topics of the Lord, etc. The mind is, when the mind is thus absorbed in thought of me, the devotee does not desire even the highest benediction obtainable in the upper planetary systems, including Satyaloka. He does not desire the 8 material perfections obtained from mystic yoga, nor does he desire to be elevated to the kingdom of God. Yet, without desiring them, the devotee enjoys, even in this life, all the offered benedictions. Anybody have mystic powers? Fly on the carpet? Or become really small, or become really big, or listen to what Prabhupada says about obtaining mystic powers, and it's the essence is, if the devotee so desires, Krishna gives it. The devotee doesn't so desire, and still Krishna gives it. At least, you know, it's within their reach. Remember, it's a very new devotee, Bhakta, living in the Boston temple for a very short time. Every time we had prasadam, commonly it was Satsuru Maharaj, who was Grahastha at the time, or some other devotee. What we would do at prasadam was, every day, and we really looked forward to not just taking prasadam, but the katha that would happen. It was just tell Prabhupada stories. And we were like little kids just hearing these wonderful Prabhupada stories. And one of the Prabhupada stories was just, you know, I think it was Shama Sundar had communicated with Satsuru Maharaj the following. They were installing the deities in Bury Place in London. Bury Place was a rented place, we didn't own it. So Radha, London, Ishwar were to be installed. And there were several devotees involved in that procedure. And prior to the installation, Prabhupada wanted to place the deity on the altar, but it was a makeshift altar with just pieces of marble kind of held together, because we did things, you know, by the seat of our pants at that time, just whatever we could get together and boom, let's go. So here were three very strong young American, you know, Guru Das, Shamasundar, and Mukunda. Strong, well, Mukunda's not so strong. The other two are very strong. And they were setting up the altar. And the marble started to totter at the top above the deity. It would have crashed on the deity. Prabhupada quickly moved. He had a small stature, but he held up the marble. Where, you know, two of the strong men were trying to hold it. It was too heavy. Prabhupada went like Superman and held it up. Just, you know, by spiritual strength. Not just, here he is, a, you know, 70-something-year-old Bengali. You know, small stature, Brahmin, sannyasi. He held up, so they, and then he instructed them, put this here, put that there, and so it was secure, so the deity wouldn't be in danger. And then he dropped his arms. Where did that strength come from? Hanuman. You know, this he exhibited for Krishna's service some power that ordinarily he wouldn't exhibit. So, in the verse, there's this word vibhuti. In the Bhagavad Gita, the 10th chapter, it's in Sanskrit, it's vibhuti yoga. Vibhuti is mentioned also in the first canto, chapter 3, in that list of incarnations, after describing the Purusha avatars, from whom the other avatars, Leela avatars, etc., appear, and the Guna avatars, Sutta Goswami then describes the Vibhutis. And what's Vibhutis? So it's a category of a direct manifestation of the Supreme Lord, Vibhuti. But Vibhuti, distinct from Bhaga, Bhaga means opulence, as Krishna is Bhagavan. Krishna possesses in full all bhaga, spiritual opulences, and that's manifest in the spiritual world. So, bhaga. And then vibhuti means something else. Vibhuti means a material opulence, or a reflection of those opulences as found in this realm. And so we know from the 10th chapter of mountains, I'm the Himalayas, I'm a fish, I am sharks, I'm the shark, and so on. And I've, so many things. I'm the strength of the strong, the prowess of all powerful men. These are vibhutis, the excellences of things of this world. And they are reflections of the spiritual opulences of Krishna, the spiritual world. So, they're material. Mystic cities, they're material. It's discussed in Nectar Devotion. So, fly in the air. You can do it mechanically, fly in the air. And so forth. All the things that mystic cities, Prabhupada describes, it's simply by subtle consciousness and being in touch with super soul, manipulating material laws so that extraordinary things can happen, but it's on the material plane or the physical plane. But it's subtle, and so it's mystical. So these siddhis, or it being mentioned here, vibhutis, opulences, extraordinary opulences. The devotees don't want extraordinary opulences, but they may be decorated by him if it's for service for Krishna. And it happens. Krishna may decorate his devotee with superlative capacity. Like Arjuna, for example, you know, the best of the archers. It's material. But it was used in Krishna's service, and because of his unalloyed devotion to Krishna, Krishna gave him a capacity that none of the other students of Dronacharya had. And Drona showed them, he's best. He has this capacity that no one else has. And Bhishma would regularly confirm, no one can defeat Arjuna. I can defeat Arjuna. Because he also has vibhuti, he has special capacity. That special capacity is because of Krishna awards that because of his devotion. And the devotees don't desire, oh, I want this vibhuti, I want that vibhuti, let me worship Krishna, I'll get this opulence. But Krishna, that he didn't want, the Krishna gives. He may. The potential is there, if Krishna so desires. So here's comment, purport. The vibhutis, or opulences offered by Maya, are of many varieties. We have experience of different varieties of material enjoyment, even on this planet. But if one is able to promote himself to higher planets like Chandraloka, the sun, or still higher, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, or even ultimately the highest planet, which is inhabited by Brahma and is called Satyaloka, there are immense possibilities for material enjoyment. For example, because the duration of life and how long the duration of life is in the higher planets. If you want to live long, go to the heavenly planets, you live long. It is stated in, these are all descriptions of the external energy of the Lord, or Maya. Besides these, there are other opulences which the yogis can achieve by their mystic power. They are all material. A devotee does not aspire for all these material pleasures, although they are available to him simply by wishing. So you better watch out when you wish, because you could be entangled in gaining the fruit of such a wish. Because if the wish is mixed through mixed devotion, then you become entangled. Remember this from previous discussions, little mathematical formula. the fruits of piety plus an impure heart equals pride. And it's a problem. There's this saying, pride goeth before the fall. And pride is it's insidious. It destroys everything good. And the tendency for pride is there as long as the heart is not pure. Who can say, oh, my heart is pure, 100% pure? So what to do? Because we do good things and we get the fruits of piety of those good things, but our heart's not pure, and then the tendency is to become proud. And then we fall. So what do you do? Make your heart pure. And cultivate at least the condition where I don't approach Krishna. It's a cultivation. I don't approach Krishna for fulfillment of this desire, that desire. What if I have so many desires? Sarvakama. Well, still engage in devotional service. And tivra bhakti, akama, sarvakama, va mokshakama, udharadi, tivrena, bhakti yogena. Because if you have tivra bhakti, very strong devotional service, that fire of devotional service can burn the desire, the attraction for something other, like Dhruva Maharaj. Classic, that intense desire to get his kingdom just burned to ashes. And instead it was just wanting the association of Vishnu and being engaged in his service. So much like it's being said here, Dhruva got that pure devotion, but he also got the kingdom, which he then ruled without material desire. So the flow of events in the life of a devotee may be connected to something that's behind. You know, where you were before you came into devotional service, and those residual desires are still lingering. The last of the Chaturshloki verses in Bhagavad Gita is especially very nice, because Krishna says, even those residual tendencies, I personally remove. It's very nice. Because even when your devotional service has progressed to the stage where not only is Rupa Goswami's teaching, which says anyabhilashita shunyam, other desires should become zero, specifically jnana and karma, the aspiration for speculative knowledge or prosperity through pious activity, when all that's gone, still we've been in contact with matter for who can say how long? Unlimited amounts of time. So there's a residual tendency. What about that? If we're not vigilant, residual tendency can kick in. Just become complacent for a while and see what happens. Tendencies try to come barging in the front door and occupy the space of your life. So we see it in lives of others, and the first tuned in will see that tendency within ourselves. So what about that? Residual tendency. In jnana dipena vastaka aham ajnana jam tamaha, Krishna describes, with those things that are born from the darkness of ignorance, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge. I mean, Krishna doesn't force us to not do our residual tendency things, but he gives us knowledge. And if we are alert to our relationship with Krishna, and Krishna gives us knowledge either from within or from without or combination, then the light goes on. And we don't do those things. That's Krishna's protection, depending upon our relationship with Him and those who represent Him. We're protected. We're protected from residual tendency. That's the super plus from devotional service that's not there in the other forms of elevation. That is, Krishna specifically steps in and helps. Because He knows the heart of the devotee, and even if there's some inattentiveness or slackness or something, Krishna gives His prompt. And then we can say yes or no. And if we're tuned into the Krishna channel, it's yes. If our relationship with Krishna is vibrant, it may have become diminished by our slackness, but if it's still vibrant, alive, then the answer is yes. We say yes to Krishna. We say no to Maya. So, even still, those facilities that was being said in this verse by Kapila Dev, is those facilities are just a fingertip's distance away. So if for Krishna's service something is needed, it's there. Yoga kshema vaham yaham. Krishna's, whatever it is that we require for Krishna's service, provided we have the proper qualification to not fall back into Maya and be the enjoyer of those facilities in a material way. Krishna gives facilities. He gives opportunity and resources, whatever is required for devotional service. It's not like whimsical. Krishna gives and Krishna takes away. He recognizes what our capacity is, and according to our capacity, He gives. To utilize capacity to utilize something and not fall down. So I'll just read that sentence again. A devotee does not aspire for all these material pleasures, although they are available to him simply by wishing. By the grace of the Lord, a devotee can achieve wonderful success simply by willing. But a great devotee does not like that. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught that one should not desire material opulence or material reputation, nor should one try to enjoy material beauty. One should simply aspire to be absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord, even if one does not get liberation, but has to continue the process of birth and death unlimitedly. Actually, however, to one who engages in Krishna consciousness, liberation is already guaranteed. Devotees enjoy all the benefits of the higher planets and the Vaikuntha planets also. It is especially mentioned here, Bhagavatim Bhadram. In the Vaikuntha planets, everything is eternally peaceful, yet a pure devotee does not even aspire to be promoted there. But still, he gets that advantage. He enjoys all the facilities of the material and spiritual world, even during the present lifespan. Now, if one's heart is not pure, one could easily start rubbing one's hands together thinking, aha! In the mood of being an enjoyer, controller, and pride, and all those things. When that takes place, everything becomes very distant. And if one's heart is not in that disposition, everything becomes very proximate. It's a reciprocation that proportionate to our submission to Krishna, Everything, spiritual and materialistic, is available. And to put, conversely, proportionate to our interest of separate enjoyment from Krishna, everything becomes very far away. And we have to struggle very hard and think that by fruitive activity I can get this, that, the other thing. And by thinking that way, it entangles us more in darkness. It's enigmatic. It's puzzling. But that's what Kapila Dev is saying. Now there is this other position that is the Vedic process or other religion processes that say you do this, you get that. You get to go to heaven. You get heavenly pleasures when you go to heaven. You get a long duration of life. You get so many things. And it's true, or it's legitimate, it's Vedic. But the Bhagavatam, at the very, very beginning, identifies this as Kaitava Dharma, which is strong language, cheating religion, meaning the real opportunity of the spirit soul, especially in this human form of life, is to achieve what Kapila Deva is describing. And what's the price? You give up everything to get everything. So there's this contradiction. Well, what is it that's yours to give up? Nothing. Just acknowledge it. Well, what about everything? It's progressive, or it's incremental. To gradually approach that position where our original relationship with Krishna is fully restored. And it's gradual. Just put it in a contemporary context, same message. About 1 week ago, it was Thursday of last week, I was at MIT in Boston, and there's a regular club there. They call it the Vision Club, something like that. And it's a challenging audience because, for a number of reasons, the students are very cerebral, not just intellectual. They're cerebral. They're not another feeling. They're different people. And they have enormous amount of academic pressure, so they have very little time to do anything other than their academic work. And they like their academic work. That's like you have an appetite for it. And so it's hard to capture their interest. Plus, they're in the city of Boston, so they have all these zillion distractions of whatever they have discretionary time to go and do other things. So. But the people that do come, they're really special people. And it's nice to interact with them. So this week ago, there was a side discussion after the presentation that I made about whether you need a goal of life or not. And the person, one student, he is European origin because of his accent, he was saying, I don't think you need a goal of life, because the goal of life, his perspective is that the goal of life unfolds just in the course of living life. And what I may think today about this is a goal, I live life for a little while and that changes and then that changes, and so I don't think you can say that life has to have a goal. Rather, the goal evolves, basically, was what he was saying. And I was taking another position that was from practical experience as well as from very strong, clear, firm teaching that I received from my spiritual master, is you must have a goal. I mean, there is a goal, and you must know what that goal is. When this body is produced by material nature under God's direction. There's a purpose. And if you know what the purpose is, and you apply this machine, this apparatus, according to the God-intended purpose, you get the God-intended result. There's a mission of the human form of life. And I agree with you that what that is gets further clarity and further clarity and further clarity, and I can say that the course of my life in the 40-something years that I've been engaged in devotional service. If I said, you know, what that which I said at the very beginning, in the middle, and presently, my awareness, my sense, my conception of what that is has become more mature and more clear and more vivid. It's not the articulation is different, but my sense of realization is different, and how I apply myself is somewhat different. So, yes, the clarity of goal evolves, but I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't have that goal so many years ago. And I gave as a personal example, this is anecdotal, but it relates to our topic here. One of the other questions was, how did I get, you know, start up my Krishna consciousness? How did I get to do what I'm doing now? How did I get that goal? So I gave the story of how that happened as a college student, a series of events, and I started searching. And amongst the things that I was searching, I came across this, and this made sense. But I, you know, my mission was, I want to know what my convictions are. That was how it started. What are my convictions in life? How can I live my life without knowing what my convictions are? And get so busy with living life, and, you know, is that a career of a medical path of a medical career? I saw the persons ahead of me, how intensely busy they were. You don't have time. And people will say that when we invite them to take a book or to chant. I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. I look at their life and they don't have time, because the material energy has engaged them so completely. They don't have time. But something happens when you decide, well, wait a minute. You make the commitment to Krishna, and then there's time. Isn't it? It's described in Isha Upanishad, in one of Prabhupada's purports, I like very much. It's the internal potency acts in our life differently than the external potency acts in our life. And when we situate ourselves in the internal potency by wishing to engage in devotional service, somehow there's time. I mean, for all of us, when we first started chanting, you know, you begin with something. And thinking, doing more than something, we don't have time. And then somehow, if you have time, and the chanting expands. And then so many other things, here we are. Doing something that we're making the time to do that which is important to us. And we still do our other things, but we're, you know, the internal potency is acting in our lives. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able. So, I said to these students, I decided when I was in that particular stage of my life, I don't want to be at the end of the conveyor belt of life and still not know what my convictions are. So I'm doing a timeout. I want to know what my convictions are. That was how it started. What's not what somebody else says my conviction should be. What are my convictions? And it's not going to come from outside. It's going to come from what my convictions are. And I'm going to do some things. So whatever those things are, I don't know what those things are. But I'm going to do whatever I need to do to get an answer to that question. And yes, it evolved. But it really, the connect was hearing, hearing from Srila Prabhupada, hearing from one who knew what the mission of life is, what the purpose of life is. And because it resonated very strongly, my clarity of what that was that he was saying wasn't so great, but it resonated. And in the course of time, so he said, you mean to tell me that your understanding of what the goal is evolving? And I said, yeah. The goal hasn't evolved, but my understanding has evolved. He said, Because otherwise, what is life? And I said, when I was a child, I remember this little nursery rhyme, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. You know that one? Yeah. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. And that's what life is. It's just row, row, row your boat. And where are you going? I'm not going, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just rowing my boat. Hope you get there. Or life is a journey. That's another way of saying the same thing. What's the goal of life? There's no goal of life. Life is a journey. Journey to where? Not journey to where, just a journey. You have different experiences and then you die. There's no goal, just journeying. And they have books about it, and serials about it, and novels about it, and the Iliad, the Odyssey, and classical stuff about journeying, looking for just an experience. I had a friend in college that had a little sports car, and he would shared with me, he liked going for drives in his sports car. And I asked him, when you go for a drive in your sports car, where are you going? He said, just going for a drive. And I thought, that's, I hope you get there. Wherever there is. But having a clear sense of what's the mission of life? It's been awarded to us. Here we have a human form. What's it all about? It's a classic question, but if you don't ask the question, you're not going to get an answer. If the answer is, well, it doesn't matter, you just row your boat. Anyway, it was an interesting discussion with this MIT student. He came up afterwards and said, you've given me a lot to think about. Do I need a goal in life? The fact of the matter is we all have at least short-term goals. Here you are in college and you're doing something so you can get a degree. What's the purpose of the degree? You tell me, or I'll tell you. Well, you don't have to tell me. Besides its career, it's also you're here at MIT because you have some pride that you have this capacity and you want to use your capacity and feel good about yourself that you're using your MIT brain. That's why you're here. And the job that you'll get afterwards, because you got a degree from MIT. So there's some perks, there's some things that you're pursuing. There's a goal. And so what's the big one? What's the long-term one? At the end of the conveyor belt, what's there? Ask yourself the question. You can think about this. So, for the devotee, what Kapila Deva is teaching here to Devahuti is the goal of the type of devotional service that he's describing to Devahuti is Krishna's everything. And so when other facilities are offered. It's very much like Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopakumar experiences so many things. And he doesn't, initially it looks like he's got an interest to experience this, to go there, and have this position, and have that facility, and he leaves it. because it's not satisfying. So we can do a shortcut and just go straight to Krishna. That's what he's recommending explicitly in previous verses. Just direct, not the indirect, direct. And once having that connection, the interest in these other things fades, but they're at your fingertips. I'll end with this. Prabhupada gives this example. In the palace of the king, he has a queen. And the queen has so many attendants, or ladies-in-waiting, or different language. And so, as the queen moves about the palace, following behind her are so many attendant ladies-in-waiting. To the queen, the faithful queen, that's not her interest. She has one interest, the king. And those things, those faculties or facilities are there, but the loving, faithful queen is not interested in them. You know, so that's an ideal situation. Largely, there's, I want my indulgences. But for the devotee, so many facilities are there that it's not for material enjoyment, but it's for Krishna's service. And you can think of anything. Your ability to use technology, or your ability to play the drum, or your ability to cook something very nicely, or your whatever are the things that you do. Those are abilities that Krishna has given. And the real satisfaction is not displaying them and getting recognition. The real satisfaction is doing for Krishna. That's at the heart of bhakti. And when that heart of bhakti is vibrant, the facilities are there, but they're not alluring one. Oh, look at that one. Oh, look at that one. Let me be the enjoyer of this one, that one, put some together and be happy. That's not the disposition of devotion. But they're there. Liberation is there. Heavenly pleasure. Transcendental pleasure. Opulences of the spiritual and material world, they're there. Even in this lifespan, as Prabhupada says, but the devotee is disinterested in them. They're interested in one thing. They may be utilized in Krishna's service, but they're interested in pleasing Krishna, one thing. It's fantastic. This place becomes Vaikuntha. And, you know, it's not Vaikuntha. It's a place of strife and adhyatma paklesha, adhidaiva paklesha, adhibhauta paklesha, and dissension amongst people and Kali Yuga stuff going on all over the place. And there's some nice people, and there's, anyway, the whole variegatedness is there, but it's not Vaikuntha. But if one consciousness is connected to Krishna, it becomes Vaikuntha. The experience is just different varieties of service unto Krishna, and the happiness that comes from serving Krishna. That's the teaching that we're getting from Lord Kapiladeva in the Bhagavatam. And there is Heather's. Any discussion? Yes?
So, Maharaj, you said that if there are any residual tendencies in the heart, so Krishna will try to remove them. So, we have seen that in Bhagavatam, the examples of Guru Maharaj or Krishna saying it. But in the real time experiences, do you know anything you can share?
It's there for any one of us. Our contact, our involvement in the material energy is really fresh. And let's say it the other way, our involvement in devotional service is minuscule compared to the lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of material involvement. Residual tendency is being checked by Krishna. Because karmically, we're being pushed by that, the force of our past deeds. It's acting. And it's pushing, but it's being checked. to the degree that our consciousness is being directed to Krishna and His service. Now, some part of that is dovetail, tendency connected to Krishna, His service. But it's not the same as material. The consciousness is not the same, the result is not the same. Even the behavior is not the same. If the energy that's conducting our activity is not the same. However, if one slackens, then what happens? Immediately, tendency comes. Thoughts start crowding our mind, and etc. Just make a little experiment. Slacken in devotional service. One devotee, a bhakta, this is many years ago, he said, I want to be really sure about what I'm doing in devotional service is real, so I decided I'm going to stop chanting and see what happens. You know, an army of people tried to persuade him that he was really, I want to be really sure. And he just disappeared. And some time later, about 2 years later, I saw somebody who approached me and said, "You're right." I didn't even recognize him. He got so beaten up by the material energy. Chanting really helps. There's protection from chanting. And then I recognized because he didn't even look the same. So the reality is that we're receiving protection presently, and as we make spiritual progress, more and more and more, the connection is strong and the residual tendency is not acting. So it's completely gone. That's the internal potency. Something else? Yes.
Question. You mentioned Gopal Kumar and Bihar.
Bhagavatamrita. Bhagavatamrita, yes.
How do you think it's a point? How does it relate to.
It relates in that he had desire. He had a spiritual desire, but he also had. Wasn't clear what that was. And therefore it came out as different forms of material desire, thinking maybe that's it, maybe that's it. And so he went progressively through different situations, as we do, searching for that not so clear goal, but we have some idea what the goal is, and it's trying, experiencing this and that and the other thing. And he recognized that's not it. That his consciousness had evolved, and he went on to the next thing and on to the next thing until he finally reached Krishna Loka.
But for those things that he went after before.
Yes, he was journeying, but he had a goal, although the goal was not crystal clear what that is. It grew in clarity as he went on. And as a result, because the goal was not clear, he wasted a lot of time. It was, a big adventure, but he wasted a lot of time. And it's something like after Dhruva Maharaj was given the kingdom to rule over by Lord Vishnu, and Vishnu left, Dhruva sat and cried and cried and cried. He was in ecstasy that the personality got it had just come, but he was so sad because I could have gone with him. But because I had this stupid desire, I have to stay and be separated from him.
Isn't it so that we are so conditioned that there is a recipe for us and we've got to go through those things?
Yeah. But you don't have to go through those things. Take, you know, what your life might have been or my life might have been had you not come in contact with Krishna consciousness. Let's not think too much about it. It would have been different than what we're doing. So we're bypassing lots of stages of things that we would have had to go through due to our past karma. Thank God. Yeah.
Okay. I was asked this question recently by someone. I'm just pulling forward for your thoughts on it. She said that I'm following all reading, chanting, and then read a lot, and I understand the philosophy and all. But I'm not sure. I have this desire or lust in my mind, and I want to enjoy it. And it's just not wrong. Being violent for your principles, those kind of desires. And he wants to be absolutely sure that, you know, he enjoys those things first. And then, you know, he'll come back to the platform of devotional service. And of course, I know from scripture and what you just said that it doesn't work. But any thoughts that, you know, how do you answer such a...
It's an issue of faith. You know, some people, it's like the argument that I have to suffer so that I know what happiness is. But that's not true. Happiness is happiness. It's like, you know, I have to starve in order to know what feeling satisfied from eating is. It's not true. Exploring the length and breadth of duality is not necessary in order to recognize transcendental happiness. Not necessary. But, you know, that's, I started by saying it's a matter of faith, because for those who have faith, they have access to understandings and realizations that those that do not have faith don't have access to. Krishna says it twice in Bhagavad Gita. Those who are moga asha moga karma no moga jnana vichita sat rakshasi asari vichaiva. The position of one who doesn't have faith, they are defeated before they even take one step. Moga asha, their desires. Moga karma, no, their fruitive work. Moga asha, moga karma, no, moga jnana, their attempts for expanding their knowledge and understanding. They're defeated because those are available for those who have faith. And those who don't have faith, it's struggle with the material energy. That's a whole other program. But if one can't do this, then one can struggle with the material energy and realize, wow, it's a struggle. But in many cases, engaged in the struggle, one thinks it's enjoyment. Prabhupada's example, to make it really vivid, is the living entity that's in the body of a hog, and invite the hog to be relieved from that life of a hog, and the filthy place that he lives, and what he eats, and etc., etc. He doesn't want to give it up. Another example Prabhupada gives is take a worm from stool and remove the worm from stool, and the worm will then go slither back into the pile of stool, because that's his happiness. That's his home. Now, consciousness determines the situations of life in which we find ourselves. As our consciousness is situated, the configurations of duality move. So, It's the consciousness, it's not what you're exposed to. And your the consciousness that you carry has everything to do with the association that you keep and the faithfulness with which you receive that association. Then that establishes consciousness, which establishes how I see the world and the world that's presented to me, the configuration of duality for me. So consciousness is at the heart of our experience. And to turn on the light of Krishna consciousness or pursuit of an eternal relationship with this loving, most loving personality, most merciful personality, most happy and fun personality that exists is the personality of Godhead. That's our real position. And lacking faith in that, I'm looking towards some other way. Something else? Yes?
Maharaj, just a basic question too. We discussed devotee not looking for the liberation and they just want to engage into the devotional service. This is not to remain into the devotional service. At the same time, we read Krishna, liberation is guaranteed in the Krishna consciousness. So why is it so that soul cannot remain engaged into the devotional service after liberation?
Yes, the soul not only can, but the point is, as soon as you begin devotional service, that's from the liberated platform. The liberated platform means the Brahman platform. Devotional service is from the spiritual platform. Even at the very, 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 very beginning, that is, contact with Krishna is there for devotional service to take place. It's on the Brahman platform. So we don't need to aspire for liberation because it's already on the Brahman platform. That's philosophically, and now experientially, that realization progresses. In the beginning, I may not realize that. As my devotional service progresses, I realize that. I don't need to ask Krishna for liberation. It's already included in the platform of devotional service. But liberation, what does that mean? It means being in contact with the personality of Godhead. So one can be, let's say, Narada Muni. No, we're not Narada Muni. But Narada Muni can go anywhere. And his consciousness is Vaikuntha consciousness. He can be with Mugari the hunter in a forest, or he can be with Krishna in Dwarka, and wherever else he might go, sitting with King Pachinibari, who is attached to fruitive activities. You know, whatever the range is, his consciousness is fully spiritual. He's on the Vaikuntha platform or the Brahman platform to engage. So now what about us? Because we're not Narada Muni. But if that acceptance of devotional service is there, the contact with Krishna is there, the activities performed are from that platform. And because of that fact, consciousness expands. Krishna consciousness expands. And as I stay steady in the sadhana, the practice, the cultivation of devotional activity, that consciousness expands. And as that consciousness expands, the realization expands. And the detachment, when you turn the dimmer switch up, the bright thing becomes brighter and brighter. Darkness is dispelled. And then down, and then darkness comes up. So to the degree to which we're immersed or connected consciously in Krishna's service. The realization of we're on the liberated platform already becomes, you know, cognizant and palpable. So one can go anywhere in Krishna's service and be the light sign. The darkness isn't affecting you, although you may be in a place of darkness. The ignorance and violence and doesn't affect you. And from that position, then you can administer service to Krishna appropriately, because Krishna is guiding and directing. Okay? Anything from the ladies' side? Over there? Okay. Yes.
You told us a nice story about the goal of life you were discussing last week.
Yeah.
So, ultimate goal of life is to go back to Godhead, and I understand the short-term goal is like to do the devotional service. The ultimate goal of short-term goal is to do chanting. And like, so, what are the examples of the medium-term goals, and what are the realizations? Can you share your experiences in as we progress, so what are the realizations and experiences we may come across?
Let me add something that you said earlier. Our goal, long term, is to be fully reestablished in our loving relationship with Krishna. Now, that's actually what back to Godhead means. It may not mean, it may be back to Godhead in this lifetime while I'm still in this body. But it's that consciousness of being with Krishna in His service. And that's back to Godhead. Let me answer your question by referring to scripture. And you're asking for realizations and so forth. But the scripture gives that explanation. Three things. And this is a way that you or any one of us can evaluate our progress in Krishna consciousness, our spiritual progress. I like to do devotional service. Bhakti. Jiva Goswami calls it, you know, an attraction for doing service to Krishna, whatever that is, just doing service to Krishna. And para isha anubhav, some feelings for personality Godhead. And another is perhaps more easy to notice. Detachment, progressively becoming detached from other things. I'll give an example of an older, now elderly, devotee in New York. This devotee in New York had moved in intellectual circles. You know, cultured, intellectual New York, you know, circles. And in a friendship they had with one individual, every year they would pick some cultural event that they would go to, and they would look forward to it and, you know, go together to the Philharmonic or the Lincoln Center or the something or the something, and some wonderful, brilliant speaker would present something, and they'd go and hear that speaker present something or whatever it was, and then go back and talk like New Yorkers, intellectual New Yorkers, about, you know, their experience and the impact on life and, you know, that kind of thing. And the point in time came where I didn't tell this devotee, you shouldn't do that. They came to the conclusion and shared this with me, that when their friend contacted them, they said, you know, quite honestly, I'm not interested in doing that anymore. I mean, it's been my life, and it's been our life together. But I don't have interest in doing that anymore. I'd rather stay at home and read Srimad Bhagavatam than do that. And I'm very happy. I'd like to share that happiness with you, but I don't think that you're interested in that happiness. You like this other one. But it's just, it's faded. It's not, you know, something got chopped. It's just disinterest of that which was one of the highlights of the year. Just lost interest.
The best gets developed automatically.
Yes, naturally. Those three things. And that's using your language, that's an intermediate stage. So let's say, for example, when there's some opportunity, like right now, there's a sannyasi visiting in Seattle, and you've got a busy life, I'm sure. You've got, you know, things you've got to do as soon as you get up and go to the next thing. You've got things pressing on you. But you're here. You're sacrificing that discretionary time for something that you value spiritually. So otherwise this time would be occupied with something else. So that something else got displaced by this. And that's an indication, an eagerness to hear. An eagerness to understand what one has heard. An eagerness to apply. Because the question is not just theoretical, it's a practical application question that you're asking. How do I apply this? How do I understand? How do I measure how I'm progressing? So let's just say, just on that note of eagerness to hear, I have this much. Now I know that it's a litmus test of, so let me try to be maximum attentive when I have these opportunities to hear, because life is short. In that flash, it's gone. So when I do have this opportunity, let me take it very seriously. Let me give myself to that experience and see what happens. And if something's going to touch my heart, then let me apply that something and see what happens. And so forth. And then progressively the light becomes brighter and the darkness becomes lesser. Just by the light becoming brighter. It happens at the pan scale. This side goes up, that side goes down. You have to do something separate. Yes.
Krishna Maharaj, you are feeling better now.
Yeah.
Maharaj, I have a question. You just now said that Dhruva Maharaj, he cried and he said that he couldn't go with the Lord.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, everyone has a service, maybe in the spiritual world or here. So yeah. Wasn't that his service to stay in that kingdom and serve?
Yeah, the Lord gave him that service.
Yeah.
But because he had, the point that you're making certainly has its merit. The Lord has given me the service. It could be, yay, now I have some service that the Lord gave me directly. Yay. But then there's another side. He had attachment for Vishnu, not a material attachment. He had an attachment for that relationship. And that's nice too. That's transcendental also. Not something material, something the personality of Godhead. I'd like to be directly engaged. And now I have this remote engagement. So be it. But I'd like this. So an aspiration for direct engagement is fine. If the Lord so desires, I will serve remotely. But our stage isn't at that of Dhruva's, because he directly, and even before the Lord came before him, he was in such a state of trance. The Lord was fixed within his heart, and he was seeing the Lord within his heart. And suddenly the Lord disappeared, and he opened his eyes, and there he was in front of him. Then he said goodbye, see you later in 60,000 years.
I think Maharaj needed one more story. I'm not remembering the character in Bhagavatam, that was the Vritrasur story, and
which story?
Vritrasura. Yes.
Okay.
And we had a discussion in the class. I'm not remembering the character name, where he came face to face to the God, Lord Sri Krishna, and then the Lord left, and then he also took a leave, and that's why we discussed why the person took a leave, because he wanted to serve the Lord. It's not only that you have to be always in a close association of the Lord, but you can serve the Lord anywhere.
Yes. At the same time, here, this is called one of the features of intelligence is there are two things that seem to be mutually contradictory or mutually exclusive, and to be able to hold both of those two things at the same time. Because the mind can't do that. The mind is binary. It's either a one or a zero. It's not one and zero. So, on the one hand, but on the other hand, one can serve Krishna anywhere. On the other hand, I hanker for that association. Direct. When I'm doing devotional service remotely, it's also direct. It's not indirect. But it's not being in his presence. It's like, say, for disciples of Prabhupada. It's been a long time, 1977, in 2012. I'm serving, you know, there's no option, serving remotely. But being in Prabhupada's physical presence was very, very special. And I again hanker for that. Not again, you know, may that day come when I can be directly in Prabhupada's physical presence and serving him. I'll serve him remotely. And even during his physical presence, there were most of my devotional service was remotely. But it was, I never passed up the opportunity to be with him in person. It's good to have that hankering. It's not material. Serving remotely is also not material. That's good. And both are good. Otherwise, why were the gopis lamenting? Krishna's gone. There's a description that Yugayatam Nimeshena Chakshusha Pravasayatam. And even one moment separation from Krishna seems like a million years or more. It's described when not just the gopis, the cowherd boys, they were going through the forest herding the cows. And they're side by side with Krishna. And as they're walking along, a tree would get in the way. So the cowherd boy would go this way, Krishna would go that way. And for that period of time when they couldn't see Krishna because the tree was in the way, because of the intensity of their attachment for Krishna, and then they could see Krishna on the other side. Vipralamba samhoga. Separation, meeting. It's part of love. When the object of love is fully transcendental, then it's not material. And then there's the other side. Krishna has given me some service. Fantastic. How fortunate. Directly. Rule the kingdom for 60,000 years. Fantastic. Simple end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So let's move on to Swami Maharaj Ki Jai.